Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. If you are enjoying these studies, help us get the message out and share them with your friends. Remember to support Beth Emmanuel with your tithes and offerings by clicking on the Donate tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
But if I, brothers, still preach circumcision, why am I still being persecuted? In that case, the offense of the cross has been removed. I wish those who unsettle you would emasculate themselves. For you were called to freedom, brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love, serve one another. For the whole Torah is fulfilled in one word. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Galatians 5:11-14. Some strong words here from the Apostle Paul. The text from his epistle to the Galatians raises lots of questions we could pursue. What does it mean to still preach circumcision? And why is Paul persecuted for refusing to preach circumcision? How is that the offense of the cross? Why does he want his opponents to emasculate themselves? What does he mean by saying, "You were called to freedom, brothers"? And most of all, what is meant by "the whole Torah is fulfilled in one word, love your neighbor as yourself"? Paul says the whole Torah is fulfilled in a single word, but by my count, "you shall love your neighbor as yourself" is 7 words. Even in Hebrew, "v'ahavta lerecha kamocha" is 3 words. How do we get down to one word? In Hebrew idiom, a single word can also be a single thing. For example, we call the 10 commandments not the Aseret HaMitzvot, but the Aseret HaDivrot. Literally, the 10 words, or the 10 things. Likewise, in Greek, a single logos might mean a single word, a single message, or a single saying. The single word of which Paul is speaking is a single commandment, the single commandment of Leviticus 19:18, which says, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." He claims that the whole Torah is fulfilled in this one word. And that seems unlikely. There are 613 commandments in the Torah. How are they fulfilled in one commandment? And what does that even mean? Does that mean that so long as you love your neighbor as yourself, you don't need to keep the other 612 commandments? Paul was a student of Gamaliel the Elder, the grandson of Hillel. Paul sat in the front ranks of his school as one of his preeminent disciples, so he knew the teachings of Hillel. And he would have known that Hillel also taught the entire Torah is summarized in this single commandment. The Talmud says, "Another time, a non-Jew came before Shammai and said, 'I will convert if you can teach me the entire Torah while I stand on one foot.' Shammai pushed the non-Jew aside with a ruler that was in his hand. The non-Jew came before Hillel, and Hillel converted him, saying, 'What is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. That is the entire Torah. The rest is just commentary. Now go and study.'" Shabbat 31a. The idiom, "while I stand on one foot," means in a very brief time, sort of like saying in a nutshell, in 100 words or less. Because most people can't stand on one foot for more than a minute or so. My college roommate wanted to get his name in the Guinness World Book of Records, and he thought the easiest way to do that would be to take the world record for the longest that anyone has ever stood balancing on one foot. I remember coming to our room and finding him precariously tottering on one foot as he practiced. He never did accomplish that. 10 years later, in 1997, a Sri Lankan fellow took the record by balancing on one foot for over 76 hours. I'm not sure how that worked, but most people probably can't balance on one foot for more than a minute. The sages put a lot of emphasis on good equilibrium. According to the Talmud, so long as you are able to strap on your sandals one foot at a time without sitting down to do it, you are still young. In any case, the point is that at least a whole generation before Paul wrote Galatians, Rabbi Hillel said, "What is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. That is the entire Torah." How does that constitute the entire Torah? I assure you, Hillel did not mean to convey that none of the other commandments are necessary so long as you fulfill this one. Paul studied Torah not only as a disciple of Gamaliel and the school of Hillel, but also as a student of Rabbi Yeshua. In the school of Rabbi Yeshua, this commandment ranks as the commandment of penultimate importance. It ranks only behind the parallel commandment, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. A sage once came to our master Yeshua and asked him, "What is the greatest commandment?" Yeshua replied, "What do you think?" The man replied, "Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. These commandments are more important than sacrifices." Yeshua encouraged him, "You are not far from attaining the Messianic era." On another occasion, a scholar asked Yeshua, "What must I do to inherit a share in Olam Haba?" Yeshua answered, "What do you think? What does it say in the Torah? How do you understand it?" The man replied, "Love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself." Yeshua said, "You have answered correctly. Do this and you will live." Yeshua taught that all the commandments in the Torah hang upon these two commandments. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment, and a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the Torah and the prophets. Matthew 22:37-40. The sages distinguish between a legal ruling that hangs upon a mitzvah and a legal ruling that hangs in the air. One that hangs on a mitzvah has a firm basis in the written Torah. One that hangs in the air has no real basis in the Torah but relies on the strength of common consensus and tradition. Yeshua uses the same language to describe the other 611 commandments hanging upon these two. In the words of Hillel, that is the entire Torah. The rest is just commentary. Now go and study. Obviously, the words of Hillel and the words of Yeshua are informing the words of the Apostle Paul when he says, the whole Torah is fulfilled in one word. Notice that Hillel paraphrased the mitzvah with the golden rule, what is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. That's the negative form of the golden rule. And it's the practical explanation of what it means to love your neighbor as yourself. If you don't like the way someone treats you, don't treat others in that manner. Yeshua explains what it means to love your neighbor as yourself in nearly identical language. He said, whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. For this is the Torah and the prophets. Matthew 7:12. In other words, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, summarizes the message of the whole Bible. It's the same formulation. And both the negative form and the positive form are saying the same thing. Treat others the way you would want them to treat you. As the apostles taught the words of Rabbi Yeshua to the Gentile disciples, they transmitted the teaching of Yeshua on the subject as follows. Now the way of life is this. First, you shall love God who made you. Second, you shall love your fellow as yourself. Whatever you do want to happen to you, whatever you do not want to happen to you, do not do to one another. Didache. They place these words up front in their instructions to the Gentiles. This illustrates how central this saying was to apostolic teaching. The Didache goes on to spell out the implications with more sayings of the Master and commandments of the Torah. Scholars believe that the Didache was written late in the first century to address the disciples in Antioch and the broader diaspora. The Didache was trying to answer the question, how does the Torah apply to non-Jewish disciples of Yeshua? It was not the first time this question had come up in those communities. In the previous teaching titled, When You're Strange, I told you about a disagreement among the apostolic community over the status of the Gentile disciples. A majority of the Jewish believers and apostolic voices believed that in order for the Gentile disciples to be part of their communities and qualify for the kingdom, they should become sons of Abraham through a legal conversion. Paul of Tarsus argued that when a Gentile idolater became a follower of Yeshua, there was absolutely no need for such a person to undergo legal conversion to become Jewish. Nor did he need to begin observing the Torah, other than the basic universal moral code that applies to all human beings. Faith in Yeshua was sufficient. Paul made it clear, especially in the Epistle to the Galatians and the Epistle to the Romans, but also in his other writings, that he preferred to see Gentile disciples as sons of Abraham by faith, while legally remaining in the status of sons of Noah, beholden only to the broad terms of ethical monotheism. In those days, the Jewish community defined the broad terms of ethical monotheism as the seven laws of Noah. 1. Do not worship idols. 2. Do not curse God. 3. Do not murder. 4. Do not commit adultery. 5. Do not steal. 6. Do not eat flesh from a living animal. 7. Establish courts of justice. These seven laws are more like seven things. They are not individual commandments as much as they are categorical laws. Many commandments hang on each one of them. In any case, this was Paul's opinion. The Gentile disciples did not need to take on the additional covenantal obligations and commandments that are incumbent upon the Jewish people. He exempted them from the Torah's ceremonial concerns, calendar concerns, holidays and Sabbaths, and dietary concerns. His was not the popular opinion among the Jewish believers. It put Paul at odds with Shimon Peter, with James, the brother of the Master, and probably the rest of the apostles. They taught that the Gentile disciples should become Jewish before being allowed to enter the community of faith. The disagreement forced Paul and Barnabas to travel to Jerusalem to discuss the question with the halakhic authorities over the Messianic Jewish community. They did so. They brought along Titus. This meeting is described in Galatians 2. Contrary to the opinion of many scholars, this was not the famous Jerusalem Council in Acts 15, but rather a private audience with the pillars of the Yeshua community, James, the brother of the Master, Peter, and John. Paul persuaded them and later reported, "They saw that I had been entrusted with the gospel to the uncircumcised, just as Peter had been entrusted with the gospel to the circumcised. For he who worked through Peter for his apostolic ministry to the circumcised worked also through me for mine to the Gentiles." Galatians 2, 7 and 8. In the previous teaching, I explained to you that the term the circumcised refers not to Jews in general, but rather to Gentile converts to Judaism and to those advocating for their conversion. Peter was considered an apostle to the circumcised, meaning that the community had put him in charge of administering conversions. He apparently entered into that role when he entered the home of Cornelius the centurion in Caesarea. Paul left his private meeting with Peter, James, and John, thinking that the matter had been resolved, but it had not been resolved. Tensions continued to foment between Paul's Gentiles and Peter's Gentiles, between the Ben Noach community of Yeshua believers and the Ben Avraham community of Yeshua believers. We see those tensions heating up in the Antioch incident, Galatians 2:11, and in the epistle to the Galatians. Things finally reached a boiling point in Acts 15 when certain men from Jerusalem came to Antioch teaching that the Gentiles in Paul's communities are ineligible for the kingdom and a share in Olam Haba unless they become Jewish. But some men came down from Judea and were teaching the brothers, "Unless you are circumcised according to the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved." And after Paul and Barnabas had no small dissension and debate with them, Paul and Barnabas and some of the others were appointed to go up to Jerusalem to the apostles and the elders about this question. Acts 15, 1-2. I wish Luke had not suppressed the identity of the men who came down from Judea. I would like to know who they were and who sent them. I suspect they represented Peter, who had been entrusted with the gospel to the circumcised. The incident inspired another trip to Jerusalem to get the matter resolved. This time, it was not going to be a private meeting, but an official legal decision from the Beit Din over the entire assembly of Yeshua's disciples. In the previous teaching, we saw how the argument was not resolved until Peter relented. At that point, James proposed a compromise position by applying to the Gentiles some select laws that the Torah places upon the Ger Toshav, the stranger dwelling among you. For it seemed good to the Holy Spirit and to us to lay upon you no greater burden than these essentials, that you abstain from things sacrificed to idols, and from blood, and from things strangled, and from fornication. If you keep yourselves free from such things, you will do well. Farewell. Acts 15:28-29. At first glance, the apostolic decree seems to omit some pretty significant moral concerns, such as a prohibition on murder or a prohibition on theft. That's because it was not necessary to list the broad laws of ethical monotheism that apply to all the children of Noah. Those laws already apply to all Gentiles, whether they were Yeshua believers or not. When considering what additional laws of the Torah should be required of the Gentile disciples, the apostles did not need to restate those which already applied to every human being. They only needed to state the additional laws for which a disciple should be responsible. They selected four laws of the Ger Toshav to which they would hold the Gentile believers. 1. Abstain from things sacrificed to idols. 2. Abstain from things strangled, which is a technical term for treif and nevela, that is, something that died on its own or died without proper Jewish slaughter. 3. Abstain from ingesting blood. 4. Abstain from sexual immorality, as defined by Torah. But it should not be forgotten that the Gentile disciples were also presumably to act as disciples, learning the words of Yeshua and obeying his teachings in the capacity that they might apply to them as Gentiles. This includes all of his teachings about the golden rule of love for one's neighbor, a category of law that includes all of the Torah's commandments about interpersonal relationships and social responsibilities. So, why didn't they add the golden rule to the list? According to some manuscript traditions, they did. The Western text of the New Testament is a Greek manuscript tradition known for a few distinctive features, including paraphrastic tendencies and additional explanatory material. It fills in gaps where information that would have been obvious to the writers might be missed by a later generation of readers. Consider the Western text on Acts 15. Wherefore my judgment is that we trouble not them which from among the Gentiles turn to God, but that we enjoin on them to abstain from the pollutions of idols, and from fornication, and from what is strangled, and from blood, and that whatsoever they would not should be done to them, ye do not do to others. For Moses from generations of old hath in every city them that preach him being read in the synagogues every Sabbath. Acts 15:19-21. Again, for it seemed good to the Holy Spirit and to us to lay upon you no greater burden than these necessary things, that ye abstain from idol sacrifices, and from blood, and from things strangled, and from fornication, and whatsoever ye would not should be done to yourselves, ye do not to another. From which if ye keep yourselves, ye do well, being sustained by the Holy Spirit. Fare you well. Acts 15:28-29. This explains why Paul makes this statement, "But if I, brothers, still preach circumcision, why am I still being persecuted? In that case, the offense of the cross has been removed. I wish those who unsettle you would emasculate themselves, for you were called to freedom, brothers, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another, for the whole Torah is fulfilled in one word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." By saying the whole Torah is fulfilled in a single word, Paul does not mean that so long as you love your neighbor, you need not obey the other commandments. Instead, it means that all the commandments that fall under the general category of you shall love your neighbor as yourself apply directly to Gentile disciples on the authority of the Master who said, "In everything, therefore, treat people the same way you want them to treat you, for this is the Torah and the prophets." The love your neighbor category finds expression in numerous apostolic references to one another, such as Romans 12:10, 12:16, 13:8, 14:13, 15:71, 1 Corinthians 11:33, Galatians 5:13, 5:26, Ephesians 4:1-2, 4:32, Colossians 3:9, 1 Thessalonians 5:15, Hebrews 3:13, 10:24 to 25, James 4:11, 5:9, 1 Peter 1:22, 4:9 through 10, 2 John 1:5 to 6, to list a few examples. To put it simply, all of the commandments in the Torah that relate to the way one should treat another apply equally to both Jewish people and Gentile disciples of Yeshua. Commandments pertaining to your brother and your neighbor and one another should be interpreted in like manner, that is, incumbent upon Jews and Gentile believers, in their behavior toward both Jewish people and toward Gentile believers. Paul returns to that theme in his epistle to the Romans. He who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the Torah. For this, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, it is summed up in the saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the Torah. Romans 13, 8 through 10. Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.